Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're going to travel into a far land. It's very far away. Actually, it's almost very far away. Because it's in the United States. And we're going to travel to the Navajo land with a man who has become almost a Navajo himself. we'll find out how much he feels about that. But it's fascinating, the reality that the Navajos live in and what they can do, what they believe in, and how it reveals itself in ways that you have to believe it. And so Charles Langley has written a book called Spirit Land, The Peyote Diaries of Charles Langley. Charles, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure. Now, you're quite an adventurer because you traveled innocently into the Navajo land and were captured by them. What happened?
Well, I wasn't so much captured as captivated, I think.
That's
actually
a good word.
The real word.
Right.
I'm trying to keep this extremely long story as brief as possible, but I was the night news editor of the London Evening Standard, which is probably the biggest, it certainly is the biggest evening newspaper in the Western world. And I've been a journalist since I was a teenager. And when I got into my 50s, early 50s, I thought, I'm going to become part of the furniture if I don't get out of here. And I'd done really everything that any decent international journalist could hope to do. You know, I'd done just about the lot. So I gave it up. I quit. I walked out. I didn't have any idea what I was going to do next. I mean, I was still thinking conventionally, you know, I'll find a job somewhere. But I had one crazy idea, which I'd always had, which was to drive across the United States. Why I'd had this crazy idea, I do not know, but I'd always had it. So I flew to Miami, I bought a car, and I set out for San Francisco, where I had a friend, an English friend, who was professor at the university there. But I never arrived.
Right. So along the way, you happened to be driving through Navajo country.
Well, actually, it started off in Albuquerque in New Mexico. And purely by chance, I should emphasize, I can't really even now fully understand this, but chance plays such a huge part in all of this. I mean, many times if I turned right instead of left or spoken to one person instead of another, none of this would have happened. I wouldn't be speaking to you now. But anyway, I met some Indians, Navajo Indians, one of whom turned out to be a medicine man. And I began to go with these guys to various things that medicine men did. Some of them were healings that they did. And I was just fascinated by this. I mean, it was beyond being fascinated, actually. I mean, I was just astonished at the things these men could do and the depth of knowledge they had.
What were they doing?
Well, very early on, I mean, I kind of worked, although that's not really the right word for it. I was allowed to accompany some medicine men who I think found me as exotic as I found them. I think if I'd been an American, it probably would never have happened. But being an Englishman from London was just strange enough to get me through the door. After that, of course, it was up to me. But they would go out and they would, find people who'd been having a bad time for whatever reason. And
could be medical problems.
Yeah. But the Navajo very largely attribute illness to witchcraft. And so the medicine man would try and divine the problem. Was it witchcraft, or there are other things that can have happened in the past? People may have broken a taboo in the past. I mean, sometimes many, many years in the past. Taboos like going near a bear, or going near a tree that's been struck by lightning, or using quite innocently wood from a tree that's been struck by lightning and using it to light a fire or cook on. These are all things that the Navajo believe can cause really serious illness and problems later on down the line. And the medicine men would divine what the problem was, and they would work on the patient, as the Navajos say. And the patients would apparently get better.
That's the fascinating thing, because we're talking about a mindset of a culture that believes there are taboos, that believes that there are curses and there's witchcraft. And they live that way. And you're following them around, and this could all just be silly, nonsensical talk, except that you're seeing that the results that the medicine men are getting,
yes,
from directing themselves towards these strange things, these strange understandings about,
yes,
life, like curses, for instance, were unbelievable in how they worked in reality, because the culture is so caught up in this world of of taboos and of witchcraft. They all own it.
Yes.
And the fact that they own it makes it real, to the point where there are actually witches,
yes,
that are hired to make curses.
Yes.
And they do it physically. They actually build these little images, and they use natural materials, but they shape them in different ways.
Yes.
And they bring things together, objects that have taboos on them, and they hide them in the woods near the house, for instance, of the people who they're putting the curse on.
Yes.
Now, this is physical. They're doing this. And then all of a sudden, the person in the house comes down with some terrible disease.
Yes.
And so the medicine man shows up. And what's fascinating is how he discovers what the curse is through burning coals.
That's correct.
And you were starting to see what the medicine man was seeing, Blue Horse, was seeing, yeah, how these coals actually visually revealed the curse, and sometimes even how to find it. And you started to see what the medicine man was seeing.
Yes. I mean, I see in the fire, as they say. I mean, I see well in the fire, by which I mean I see well for an Indian, never mind for a white man.
Wow.
And what I should explain is that this process took some years. I mean, I don't want any of your listeners to get the idea that you can turn up on the Navajo reservation and a couple of days later sign up to become a medicine man's apprentice. It took me a very long time to be accepted. But I began to work with this particularly powerful medicine man called Blue Horse. That is not his real name, by the way. It's the name that we gave him. It's a traditional Navajo name. And what he does is, the apprentice, that's me, lights a special fire. And carries the red hot charcoals into the center of the home. And we have a special fireplace filled with sand that we carry, portable fireplace that we carry around with us to do this. And then he has a crystal, and that's placed at the head of this fire, and the coals are shaped into a five-pointed star, and that's again done by me as the apprentice, helping the medicine man. And then he looks into the fire to define the cause of the trouble, and it's astonishing what turns up in there. Very often you can see the curse. Very often you can see faces. And when I say faces, I don't mean... When you see, I was talking about seeing things in the fire. We have this tradition in the West of seeing things in the fire. You know, people look into their fires at home, and those of you still have them, but in days when they were common, and they see pictures in the fire. It's much, much clearer than that. It's not sort of stand on your head, screw your eyes up and try and pretend. These things are absolutely crystal clear when they appear. And very often faces appear in the fire. And the medicine man will call the patient over. That's the person who believes they've been witched. They call the patient and say, do you know this person? And they'll say, yeah, I do. I work with this guy. Or sometimes the patient will say, no, I don't know him. And then maybe a relative, his wife or something, come up, oh, yes, I know that man.
And that might be the person who hired the witch to create the curse?
That would be the person, yeah. Sometimes the witch man turns up in the fire, but more usually it's the person who has asked the witch man to curse somebody. And if I can just go back slightly, one thing that we've rather forgotten in our Anglo-American world is that witchcraft, magic, divination used to be a huge part of European culture right up into the 18th century. And historians, and I'm talking now about serious-minded historians at universities, are only beginning to rediscover what a huge part this played.
And it was called shamanism also.
Well, I don't think in Western Europe it was called shamanism. That came later, but the Navajos would never use it.
No, right, but it's referred to often as shamanism.
It's what what the Navajos are doing is what basically white people would call shamanism.
Right.
But they would never use a word like that.
Right. They have their own language. How many languages do the Navajos have?
Well, they speak English, obviously. Most of them, not everybody speaks English. Navajo, a lot of Spanish. A lot of people can speak Spanish as well.
But Navajo itself has different dialects, right?
It does, yeah. And I should say that Navajo is one of the most complicated languages in the world. I mean, it's so complicated, it was actually used as a code by the United States in the Second World War. Yeah. The Navajo, they have these people, they're very, very proud of them. They're mostly Navajo Marines, and some of them still around from the Second World War, who translated battlefield messages into Navajo and sent it in clear, which hugely speeded up battlefield maneuvers. And it was an unbreakable code. The Japanese just couldn't break it. It's incredibly complicated. And I can understand quite a bit.
Wow.
I mean, I can usually understand enough to know what they're talking about.
Uh-huh.
But I can't really take part in a conversation, because if you're an English speaker, particularly if you have a British accent like me, it's very difficult to twist your mouth and lips around these sounds. And it also has clicks in it, and it's tonal, a bit like Chinese is tonal,
uh-huh.
So that the way you pronounce something changes what the meaning is, you know, so you can very, very quickly come astray.
So this is a very interesting culture in so many ways, because even the language represents the complexity of who they are.
Well, yeah. I mean, language and culture generally, they evolve to express each other. I mean, they evolve along different pathways, but they're there to express each other. And when I first arrived on the Navajo reservation, which was about 15 years ago, most Navajos would speak Navajo. I think that about nearly 80% of Navajo spoke Navajo. Today, that number's dropped down to about 30%.
Wow, it's dropping like a stone. Incredible.
I mean, most Navajos over about 45 will still speak Navajo. Even if they don't speak it very well, they'll speak some. I think about 70 or 80,000 people don't speak any other language but Navajo. But they're pretty old people now. But in the kindergartens, in the junior schools where it really matters, the number of kids speaking Navajo is virtually zero. I mean, which means that unless something is done pretty radically and pretty quickly, then in a generation or so, the language is going to be virtually dead.
It's also a big territory. The Navajo
is huge. Yeah.
You know, it's how many square miles?
I can't remember exactly what it is in square miles. I think it's something like 70. I'll tell you what it is. It is bigger than the Republic of Ireland. It's bigger than Holland. It's bigger than Denmark. It's a big slab of territory. And because it's so big and because it's so isolated, for many, many years, right up until the present day, essentially, the Navajos have been able to preserve their language and their culture. I mean, most of the reservation is off the beaten track. And as I say in the book, there are many places where there actually is no track. And you go out there, people will only speak, well, they speak English as well, but their everyday language is Navajo, their culture is Navajo. And it's because of this enormous territory that we've been able to keep the outside world at bay to some extent. But that's beginning to collapse now,
right,
regrettably. And I personally don't really know how this is going to be put right. And I think, if I may be brutally honest, this is a matter for Navajos. I mean, if Navajos don't speak Navajo, if Navajos don't speak practice Navajo culture in traditional ways, nobody else is going to.
Right.
So really, this is a fix for them. But as far as being a medicine man's apprentice goes, what is happening now is most of the medicine men are getting very old. It's not true to say that no young men are becoming medicine men, but very few are.
Are the witches getting very old too?
That is a really good question. That's a really good question. We don't actually know, or I don't actually know, because the witches keep themselves pretty scarce. I've been present on two occasions when a witch man actually turned up at a time when we were trying to find curses and get rid of
the
evil.
But people can find them because they hire them.
They can, yeah. I don't think it would be very healthy for a man like me to go looking for witch men. I mean, these guys can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, look, the problem that I always have with this is what any reasonably well-educated person from my kind of background, your kind of background, the background of most of your listeners, is we've all been brought up and taught not to believe this stuff. It's all nonsense. Of course, you can't witch people.
Also, you've been a journalist for a leading world newspaper, an editor of that newspaper as well. So you're interested in facts. You're interested
absolutely
in what makes sense. Yeah. And you're also married to a physicist.
Yes.
So you're no lightweight.
Well, it made it more difficult. I mean, look, I made a little vow with myself when I first began this, which was not to leave my brains at the teepee door, which how I phrased it. And for the first several years, and not altogether now, I'm always at one step away from total immersion. I'm always trying to say, well, could this have been a trick? Now, if you go to one or two of these things, or three or four or five or six, you know, you might come away and say, well, it's all a trick. But I've seen hundreds of these things. You know, look, anybody listening here who knows about this, anything about science, knows that the more data you have, the more likely your results are to be correct. And I have seen over and over and over again, the medicine man divine what the problem is, divine in the fire where these curses have been hidden.
And they go out in the woods and they find them, and they're physical.
Yeah.
And they look under a rock or something, and there it is.
Yeah. And often it's buried. And of course, you know, I used to think when I first started, oh, well, the medicine man's sneaking around burying these curses and then go pick them up. But it's impossible. I mean, this place is the size of Ireland, you know.
So you travel with these.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, and you're on the spot, so you see that this is all spontaneous.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, when people contact us and say, look, I think I've been cursed, can you come out? And or Auntie so-and-so's really ill. We think, you know, there's been some taboo broken. Can you come out and see us? We never heard of these people. They just ring up out of the blue.
Right. So you show up, and then the story unfolds. But yeah. I want to get to some things because, unfortunately, it's not a long show.
Okay.
And another way that so these curses are removed, and the people get better.
They seem to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, the medicine man uses a straw and sucks things out of the person's
yes.
body or even out of a picture. And things come through the straw.
Yeah. It's not so much a straw. It's more like a bamboo pipe. It's about 6 inches long.
Okay.
I mean, if you think of like a flute with the middle
wide,
cut out.
Right.
It,
it's wide enough for objects to come through.
And he will suck out what the Navajos call the bad stuff. And this is a very basic tenet of Navajo medicine. And I've tried to do this myself, and it's very, very hard. There's this belief that the witch man can put into you bad stuff. And if I can tell this story, this actually happened to me one day. I had this pain in my shoulder, which came out of nowhere, and it was so bad, I said to my wife, I think you're going to have to take me to hospital. And then it subsided. I mentioned it to Blue Horse. He said, let me have a look. And he said, you've been shot by a ghost arrow. Now, that's something that a witch man will do. And he worked on me, and he got his pipe, and he sucked this thing out, and he showed me this tiny, tiny little stone arrowhead. And he said, give it 4 days, and everything will be fine. And for the first 3 days, it was like walking around with an open wound on my... there was nothing there. You couldn't see anything. We just thought it felt like. And on the fourth day, it all went. Now, look, let me tell you. My background, my education, probably most of your listeners, is telling them this is impossible. You cannot suck things out through people's skin not leave any mark. I agree with you. It is impossible.
And yet you've seen not only your other people, but even yourself get better from it.
But all I can tell you is, impossible or not, I got better. My shoulder went better, and it has never hurt again.
Now, what I want to look at is the bigger picture of what this means. Because these are our belief systems.
Yes.
And we shouldn't all be afraid of curses and witches and all that, because it's not in our belief system. And I believe that our belief system actually, in many ways, runs the show. So that's why, you know, you can have even like famous people who witches might want to do harm to, and they're impervious because they're not in that belief system. So they're not in the universe of what the Navajos believe in. And there are African tribes that believe in this too, and they have the same issues, same powers too. And South America, I mean, there's a lot of places in the world where, you know, they don't necessarily call it witchcraft. They might call it other, you know, magic or, but it understands how powerful our cultures can be, and the way that our minds are ingrained in our cultures to hold certain belief systems that we're vulnerable to.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And you've got to remember, as I said earlier in the show, that there was a time in Europe and indeed in America, when the belief, there was a huge belief in witches.
And it works because people believe in it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if the man who cast your horoscope says you're going to lose that battle, you're not going to fight it. So, I mean, it really does, in the past, have effect on decision-making at a very high level in Europe.
Right.
Now, among the Navajos, it still does.
But it teaches us a lot about life. The Navajos represent how powerful our minds can be and our understandings can be. And you're a witness to that. So we only have a couple minutes left. I know the show is just too short. And you're Charles Langley, and the book is Spirit Land, The Peyote Diaries of Charles Langley. Is there a website for people?
Yes, it's thespiritdiaries.com.
Spirit Diaries.
The Spirit.
Thespiritdiaries.com.
And the book's available on Amazon and on Kindle. If you just go into Amazon, put in my name, Charles Langley, it will come up.
Oh, good. It's incredible talking with you, and you're writing more and more.
Yes.
And so hopefully we'll get to talk again, too.
I would love that. Okay,
thank you. And this is Peter Roth, host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, HEART river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.